Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time. Turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Welcome back to the Pomp and Joe Show. Pomp out today, Donnie Football Friday tomorrow, and I really didn't get much of a chance to talk to the Batconian mongoose today, Mr. Brian Batko of the Post-Gazette. You can read his stuff at postgazette.com. He's on the Sullivan Super Service Fan Hotline, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. Brian, Ian Rapoport said it, quote, seems like Pickens will miss the game, and there's, quote, optimism for T.J. Watt. Is that what you're hearing? You have direct lines over there.
Yeah, Joe, I'm definitely gaining optimism on T.J. throughout this week, but losing optimism on George after he was listed as a non-participant yesterday and Tuesday. So that's kind of where I am on those two.
Man, with T.J., I know you can't say everything you've seen in practice, but why gaining optimism?
Well, the fact that he was able to be upgraded to limited yesterday, albeit in a walkthrough. And I thought there was a tone after the game and then Monday from, you know, after the game from him and then Monday from Tomlin that it wasn't as significant as it looked in the moment. And I think one thing about TJ's position is, You maybe can throw him out there on a limited snap count, manage his reps, and, I mean, would a few significant snaps from TJ be more impactful than a bunch from Jeremiah Moon? I would say probably.
How about Deshaun Elliott?
No, he was the one of those of that trio, and I would call them kind of the big three in this injury week because, you know, Larry Ogunjobi is a starter too, but I don't think he's quite as relevant to the proceedings as those three. Elliott was the one of those three that I was the least encouraged about, and I wouldn't change on that front after he also didn't practice the first couple days of the week. So I think they might have to live without him again and what could have been his return to Baltimore as well.
Brian, it's hard to feel good about this game except for one thing, and it's a big thing. It's the Steelers' mastery over the Ravens. If they win this game, it'll be 9 out of 10. And I think the 8 out of the 9 right now were by one score. Is that Tomlin over Harbaugh? Is it a coaching edge, a kicking edge in these recent games? I don't know what it is, but I'm torn on this game. I'm torn between, logically, the Ravens coming off a bye, rested and largely healthy against a banged-up Steeler team. You know, the obvious pick is Baltimore. That's why the last I saw, they're a 6.5-point favorite. And yet, there's this. I don't know what you call it. Mastery is a good word. They have something over the Ravens. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but also that stat that you cite about all the one-score games tells me a little bit of puck luck involved in that as well, to borrow a hockey phrase to describe a football matchup. You know, Tony took some offense when I called it somewhat fluky the other day when I was on with them. And I don't mean that the Steelers, you know, haven't been nailed against Lamar for the most part. But, you know, Justin Tucker missing kicks, I got to think he's going to shore that up at some point here. You know, if they get that 2-point conversion to Mark Andrews a couple years ago, we're singing a different tune. If Lamar doesn't space out and throw a pick to Joey Porter Jr. last year. It just seems like there's been so many coin flip type results that have gone the Steelers' way that one of these times it's going to go the Ravens' way. And why not a week when we just went through how banged up the Steelers are and how red hot Lamar and the Ravens are, and rested, I might add, considering they had a bye week and then something that's even easier on the body, playing the Giants.
I know. Sometimes it's not who you play, it's when you play them. And the Ravens are getting the Steelers at a good time. However, I also think, you know, I would lean toward Pony in one way that Lamar sees ghosts against the Steelers. These things happen more. He makes horrible decisions and plays against them. And I also wonder about this, Brian, is this will be the first time, and I couldn't believe this when I saw it yesterday, that he starts at home against the Steelers in front of an actual crowd. Is that right, or is it the second time?
I'd have to go back and look. I mean, I'm just going off the top of my head. There was the RG3 game in 2019. 2020 was no crowd. I don't even think I was there.
What about the Bob Spillane interception game?
That was Lamar, and that was the COVID year, I'm pretty sure.
Otherwise,
I would have been there. Yeah. Tyler Huntley has regaled us with so much quarterback play over the years in Steelers-Ravens. So, I mean, I am excited for this one. I think it's going to be a great test of what you just so eloquently laid out there, Joe, of how the Steelers have owned these guys. And yet, you know, the Ravens need this one in a big way. They have the cleaner sheet, the cleaner bill of health, I think. Although I want to say Rashad Bateman might be in doubt for this game, which would be a big loss for their passing game. So, yeah, I mean, they should be juiced up for this one at home, and that monkey on their back of the Steelers seems a little less intimidating when they are not at full strength and missing guys who have been so key to what's made them good this year, including that first Ravens game.
Yeah, Owe is another guy who was limited yesterday, and he's been kind of important for them. But my question that I was getting to on that previous point was this for you, Brian, is – given the fact that it'll be Lamar in front of a home crowd for the first time against the Steelers with people actually in the building, I could see that going one of two ways, either infusing him with confidence to have his people behind him in Baltimore, or there's enormous pressure on the Ravens, I think, in this game. Because eventually, if you don't break the Steelers' hex, I was just watching a good piece by Kyle Brandt on this today. He's saying it's not even a rivalry these days. It's big brother, little brother. They just beat them every time. If it gets to be 9 out of 10, I mean, I can see that whole building, if things go wrong early, including Lamar, just becoming, filled with angst. You know what I mean? That crowd could work for him or against him. Do you see what I'm getting at?
Yeah, absolutely. That is a great point on the Steelers and their AFC North year in and year out matchups. I scoff at people who don't think the Browns are a rivalry with them right now. Obviously, the franchise success isn't even close. There's no discussion there, but they basically trade back and forth in the last several years. And the last time they played a big game in Pittsburgh, the Browns sent them home. So I think that very much is a rivalry. But to that point, the flip side of it, you can't really say it has been with the Ravens because of how badly they have made this series one-sided over the last 4 or 5 seasons. And I guess for me, Joe, it just comes down to, in this Lamar versus the Steelers discussion, belief in the player himself and confidence, how much confidence you have that guy is going to shake it off at some point. And after losing, 3 or 4 in a row or whatever it's been to this team, could easily flip the script and win 3 or 4 in a row or 5 or 6, because I think he's that good. I think he will rise to the occasion. I am a Lamar believer, and it doesn't look pretty usually when he plays the team I cover, but I tend to think that you can't really have too many answers for somebody who's as gifted as he is.
Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. The text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder and Associates, personal injury law firm, where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. Brian Backo of the Post Gazette. Brian, the Steelers run the ball a lot. Man, do they run it a lot. I think they're second in the NFL in attempts, but they haven't been running it effectively. I think since the bye, they're less than maybe something like 3.5 yards a carry. Since the bye, everybody, including me, wants to see more pop, which means more Jaylen Warren. Not so much Najee, maybe, or a little less Najee, and no Cordarrelle Patterson whatsoever. What do you think of the state of the running game, and how do they juice it up?
Yeah, I'm with you on that last point. And, you know, hearing from Arthur Smith yesterday, he was really getting pun intended. He was getting a lot of mileage out of the metaphor of this running game being like an old pickup truck where sometimes you got to crank the key a little bit and it plods along, but then it can kind of get up there and start to gain some steam. I think that analogy can fall apart at times, and I would rather this be a high-powered sports car of an offense than anything else when you talk about efficiency. The Najee Jaylen thing is interesting because I'm with you. I think Jaylen has looked like the better back in, I don't know, four or five of the last six games maybe at this point, largely since the bye. But Najee's been really good in Baltimore. I think he's got back-to-back 100-yard games there, so he likes something about seeing all that purple. And I think he's really motivated after that fumble. I mean, I think he wants to bounce back, atone for that. It's hard to run any angrier than he does on a regular basis, but I think this is a big game for him. And I think one of the unspoken things is this could be his last Steelers-Ravens game if he's in, you know, elsewhere next season.
And he had a memorable one, what was it, 2 years ago when he caught the game-winning pass from Pickett at the end.
Yeah, but was he targeting Steven Sims? We'll never know.
Well, that's a good question. Another hot topic. I was just asking Hokie about this one.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Hey, y'all, it's Chip Patterson from the Cover 3 Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. College football is about to enter its first ever 12-team playoff era, so join me, along with Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott, as we drop new episodes five times a week to close out the year. We've got reactions, bracket breakdowns, and best bets for these matchups with championship stakes. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Really hasn't been an appreciable change in the usage of Pat Freiermuth. People want more of this guy. Was Artie asked about that?
He wasn't, but Russell Wilson was. And, you know, as he always is with any player you bring up to him, you could probably bring up the last guy on the practice squad and he'd talk about how he's making plays out there and it's only a matter of time before he's an all-pro player in the NFL. But he said Freiermuth is on fire.
What do you mean he's on fire? He only had three catches for 22 yards the last game.
He's referring to the touchdown, I suppose, and he has been a touchdown maker in recent weeks. But, yes, I would like to see a little bit more consistent usage, let's say, between the 20s as opposed to just the red zone and at the goal line, which he obviously does very well. But with not having George Pickens in there, too, if that's the case again, man, I mean, where else are you going to go with the ball. I mean, that's kind of the puzzle for Arthur Smith to figure out right now. I think he's clearly your best pass catcher, even though he doesn't have a WR by his name. And they're going to have to find ways to try to scheme him open or get mismatches, because he is reliable. And right now, there's not a whole lot of other guys who are in your receiving corps.
See, I think that touchdown catch by him was instructive in that he doesn't have to be wide open. I think he's really good at, you know, basketball style 50-50. And I also think he can get down the field a little bit more than he is. He used to with Ben. I mean, how could this guy have games of two catches for 16, two for 19, three for 17, two for 14? What are we doing here? I don't know if you call it forcing the ball. I don't. If a guy is a human mismatch, get him the ball. Let him make some plays. That was a perfect example. I don't even think that was a very good throw. You know, it could have been picked.
I thought it was going to get intercepted from the press box.
Yes, Freiermuth made a great play. He's capable of that. I like him in 50-50s. So if you want to use the term force him the ball as if that's a negative, okay, I'm not talking about you, people in general, then force him the ball, I say.
Yeah, and when we asked Pat about that at various points, whether it's this year or when they were going through the doldrums on offense last year at times, I mean, he usually says if he's not being targeted for the most part, it's defensive attention being thrown his way, and then there's open alleys on the outside. But just a couple weeks ago when they beat, I think they beat the Browns at home, and he punted the ball into the stands, and it was almost like a cathartic relief for him. I mean, he did kind of make a subtle comment that he thinks he's a pretty good player and that he can make plays when they target him. So I don't, you know, Russ hasn't always been, really productive as a quarterback for tight ends. So that there's a little bit of something's got to give there with who he likes to throw to and what Arthur Smith has done schematically in his career. But I say throw all that out the window, and I'm pretty much with you, Joe. I mean, he can make those contested catches, and without George Pickens, he's the best guy on your roster to do it.
Here's another number to throw at you, Brian, is he's been targeted 56 times and has 47 catches. And if he hadn't dropped that one the other day, and yes, everybody drops him once in a while, it'll be 48 of 56. That's like 85% of the time you throw to him, it's a completion. I kind of like that idea. Plus, he has six touchdowns. He's back on the touchdown train. I think he's a big story going into this little stretch, and then the playoffs. It's almost like you can unveil a new weapon, for God's sakes, in a guy that you already have.
Yeah, and I've been saying for weeks now that I think it's probably time to pare down the rotation a little bit. I mean, you mentioned less Cordarrelle Patterson, maybe infinitely less Cordarrelle Patterson, and I don't necessarily disagree with you there, although I guess it was a couple of weeks ago, and since he kind of showed some juice maybe, but then the fumble was also not good. Maybe less Mykole Pruitt and Connor Hayward as well. I know they're not playing a lot, but I'm almost at a point now where it's like, why use any snaps on them? I know there's certain personnel groupings and formations, but Darnell Washington has kind of vanished as far as being targeted, and, you know, it's not like he's ever going to be the next Tony Gonzalez, but, you know, he's got soft hands and can find the soft spot in the zone here and there. Another guy that we saw in, was it Denver? He made the contested catch in the end zone from Justin Fields. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's something to be said for kind of streamlining where you're going with the ball and kind of like a basketball coach shortening his rotation going into March Madness.
Brian, you're a wonderful man. I know you need to go into the locker room. If you have any gems, can you please text Sean, don't call me Seth Meyers?
Yes, I will do that, Joe.
Thank you, sir.
No problem. See you, man.
That's Brian Batko of the Post-Gazette. And here's another thing, and I know you're a Penn State guy, Sean, is Pat Freiermuth was a luxury pick. And if you're going to take a tight end that high in the draft, and didn't they pass up Creed Humphrey, if memory serves, to take a tight end?
Yeah, I believe he went in the second round.
Then use him. Please use him. I mean, he's averaging 3.3 catches per game. If you have a guy like this and you invested in a guy like this with a high draft pick and a new contract, come on, use him. Do you agree?
Even when everyone is healthy amongst the pass catchers, he should have been used more. If you're missing any of them, in particular your best receiver, he should be the number one guy. I don't think there's any doubt. And yeah, you mentioned his rookie year. I thought he was really, really good his first year, and he's always had a knack for scoring touchdowns, even back to his time at Penn State.
I think Ben gave him chances to make plays that other guys have not.
Yeah, he's not going to be a guy who catches 10 passes a game, but I think he could be a legitimate red zone threat, which it seems like they're kind of lacking amongst receivers.
Well, at least they are doing, I mean, he does have 6 touchdowns. That's the one area where they're giving him some opportunity.
Right. I mean, honestly, I think he's a guy that every single year should be closing in on double-digit touchdowns. And that had not happened the last couple of years.
For sure. I guess I'm just way more interested in using him to get to the red zone as well. We'll talk about that coming up. We'll also talk about what Ben had to say in terms of the playoffs on his podcast, Football, and the team he fears the most in the AFC. And then why don't we talk about the game tonight? I asked Hokie of his favored matchup in the playoffs. Obviously, you want to play at home, right? You want to win the division and play at home. But of those 4 teams that are possible to play, all things aside, all things being equal, which team would you most want to play if you're the Steelers? The Ravens, Texans, Chargers, or Broncos? Is that an easy question for you out there? Or difficult? Ravens, Texans, Chargers, Broncos, 412-928-9370. That's 928-9370. Listen to this show every Wednesday to hear about Starkey's Card of the Week from the Baseball Card Castle and Cranberry Contest. Run every Wednesday through Friday at noon at the 937thefan.com contest page. Man, we got a lot of things going on in the NFL. The biggest games of the year are at hand. Tackle the NFL action on FanDuel in partnership with Valley Forge, America's number one sportsbook, because right now new customers can get $150 in bonus bets if you win. The FanDuel Sportsbook app gives you everything you need to place live bets on the NFL all in one place. So when you get a hunch in the middle of a game, you can check out the latest stats, view live play-by-play, and so much more on the same page where you place your bets. Just visit FanDuel.com/Starkey to join today. You'll get started with $150 in bonus bets if you win your first $5 bet. That's FanDuel.com/Starkey. Never waste a hunch and make every moment more with FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus, present in Pennsylvania. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Going to get to what Ben thinks about prospective Steeler playoff opponents and the one team he wants to avoid in these playoffs. And we'll deliver our own opinions on that and how tonight's game might have something to say about that. Pretty big game tonight. But in the meantime, I was tuned in or alerted to an unbelievable fact regarding one of my new favorite Pittsburgh sports media people, the man affectionately known as Destiny's Child.
And you know, Destiny's Child thinks he's Nostradamus, so he's evidently putting the date out there.
It never gets old, does it, Andrew?
It's always entertaining and always good to hear from you, Joe. That's, I mean, hey, now Derek Shelton's probably got a few nicknames to work with me, but Destiny's Child is certainly a good one for sure.
Yeah, I like it a lot. It's Andrew Destin of the Post-Gazette. I don't know you very well, but in my observations and in our limited interactions in person, you seem like an exceedingly nice man. And very mild-mannered. Do you think mild-mannered is a way to describe you?
It's funny. So everybody that I work with professionally, I think, would say that. But if you asked anybody in my personal life in terms of when I'm playing sports as a kid or when it comes to goofing with buddies, I'd say anything but. But, yeah, I think that applies to a lot of people. But on the professional side, I certainly like to keep it even keeled. But when I was a kid playing on the basketball court, playing baseball, I would say I was anything but mild-mannered. I was always the kid playing catcher who would turn to the umpire and get real upset and ask where that one missed and things like that.
Okay. So there is some anger in there, perhaps latent at times?
Yeah, definitely on the basketball court. There's, not to send people down the rabbit hole, but if you go on YouTube, Love My Dad, he's got all sorts of videos from me when I played in high school and whatnot, and there's some ones where I definitely let the fire show a little bit. So maybe that side of me has tempered a little bit, but yeah, as a kid, I definitely let it get going, and I love, I'm a competitive guy at heart. I'm maybe like a... maybe a bit of a silent killer. Let's put it that way, I guess.
Well, this is why we have you on right now, because you're a fascinating figure. You're a chameleon, and you're in many ways a paradox. And I was just shooting the bull here with Sean earlier today, and it came up, and yet you're this mild mannered man, and yet you find yourself in these unusual high profile situations, like you and Shelty, with him saying, you making predictions, and him getting a little bit ticked off and saying things like this.
Destiny's Child thinks he's Nostradamus, so he's evidently putting the date out there.
And now I hear this earlier today. It just blew me away. The HBO special Winning Time, which I loved. In fact, I'm reading right now, again, the book that Winning Time was based on, and that's Showtime by Jeff Pearlman. And that's one of my all-time favorite teams, is the Showtime Lakers of the 80s. The HBO special, I don't know, maybe it was on a year ago or so, maybe a little longer than that, that you tried out for the part of Kevin McHale? What? How did that come about?
You heard all of that correctly, and I guess I should back up a little bit. So you mentioned Jeff Pearlman, so... certainly one of my favorite authors, whether it's that book on the Showtime Lakers, the Bo Jackson book, just a tremendous writer.
Walter Payton.
The list goes on, right, about profiles he's done of sports figures. So the way I should back it up is the fall of 2022, I was living in State College covering Penn State for the Post-Gazette after graduation, and I came across a tweet of Pearlman's where he basically said, hey, I'm looking for guys who played high school or college basketball who would be interested in appearing on Winning Time. And similar to you, Joe, I fell in love with the show. I watched the first season throughout my senior year of college with my roommates.
Yeah.
I played high school basketball, loved the game. I'm from California. My dad's brother and sister both live in the Los Angeles area. So I figured, you know what? I'll throw my name in the ring. I'll reach out. And so they asked for like your name, height and weight, a picture of yourself, your basketball experience. And I sent that in to an email that Pearlman had linked to. And I heard back from the HBO talent agency. And they said, hey, based on the photo and your qualifications, we think you're a candidate for the part of Kevin McHale.
Wow.
So here's a script of an exchange between McHale and Larry Bird.
City Limits would be a candidate for the role of Spud Webb, would he not, Sean? If they ever came aboard him.
He's got the height part, yeah.
Sorry, Andrew. Go ahead.
No, that's tremendous. I love that, by the way. Spud Webb, tremendous reference. But yeah, so I get the script, and it's an exchange between Bird and McHale, and it's them discussing, their frustration with the Lakers in some capacity. And it's, hey, we want you to record yourself, full scale, show that you're not reading off the script, memorize the script, record yourself reading these lines, and try to use a Minnesota accent where McHale is from,
Minnesota,
as much as you can.
Yeah.
Try to be the gregarious guy that McHale was as a personality. I read the lines. I record it. I send it into the HBO talent agency. And they tell me thanks, but no thanks. And here we are. I applied for it. It's a great video that I've shown to all sorts of friends. It's tremendously embarrassing. It's me out of character, I would say, in the sense of trying to be an actor.
Can we hear it?
I don't think I'm a particularly good one. What's that?
Can we hear it? Can you send it to Sean, Don't Call Me Seth Meyers here?
So I'll try and dig it out, but it was from my old laptop, which unfortunately broke down on me. So I'd have to really dig back and find it, but I'll try my best for you guys.
And what was the line, if you remember? Was it just one line or a couple?
No, it was a back and forth. I had a friend of mine read me the lines of Larry Bird. So I'm reading the McHale part.
Yeah.
Larry's talking to me. It's Larry and Kevin are going back and forth over beers, lamenting a recent loss. And it had something to do with, guys not being locked in on defense, not willing to play as a unit, help defense, all that sort of stuff. And McHale lamenting the fact that he's the only guy who's willing to protect the rim and stuff like that. It was so I don't have the parts, word for word, the lines, but it was pretty funny to imagine, okay, I'm going to pretend to be Kevin McHale after a couple of beers, be loose but also upset over the team not doing as well as they think they should.
This is incredible, Sean. So how close did you get to it, I wonder?
First round. I mean, I didn't get a callback or nothing, which is, I was knocked out pretty quick. But, you know, I have the script that says, you know, do not share. And the part that I think is worthwhile is that the part that I auditioned for, you know, it never ended up going to film. The show got cut short after just two seasons. So if they're ever looking to start it back up and they need somebody who's willing to play Kevin McHale for season three whenever they bring it back up, I'm ready to go.
Wow. That is a great story. My wife was in fighting back the Rocky Blyer movie, not with a big part. She was just a fan sitting in the stands, but she lived in Brockway. She grew up in Brockway, Pennsylvania, which is up near Dubois, and they needed extras, right? You know, for, I don't remember. Yeah, I think people to sit in the crowd or be lined up for tickets, whatever it was. So her dad drove her all the way in from Brockway in the middle of the night. You had to be there like at 6 a.m. or something. And she's in that movie, a little shot of her in Fighting Back, the Rocky Blyer story. How about that?
That's impressive.
That's a heck of a story.
Have you ever been in a sports movie, Sean?
I think I was just in the crowd. What was the Jean-Claude Van Damme, Sudden Death?
Yeah.
At the Igloo. Yeah, I think I was just in the crowd, but I wouldn't really count that.
So you didn't audition or anything or show up?
No, but I was curious. So did you have to do any scenes if you would have gotten this part that involved basketball? Because why would they need to know your basketball background if you weren't actually playing basketball in the series?
Yeah, that would have actually been a critical component of it. Would have been that, you know, for those who've watched the show, is that there's a lot of scenes where it is fairly, you know, clear what kind of basketball that they're playing. It's pretty high quality. And, you know, as far as my basketball knowledge goes, one of the scenes that would have been a critical one for me in that role would have been when Kevin McHale clotheslines Kurt Rambis during the NBA Finals. So,
oh my God!
So I don't know who the Kurt Rambis character would have been, but I don't know if I quite have that in me. You'd really have to get under my skin and, you know, be trying to untuck my jersey or something like that when I'm playing to get that side of me out. But yeah, it would have been a lot of basketball, which I think is one of the reasons I personally really liked the show, is that as far as sports series goes, the quality of play was really excellent from all the actors who were in it. And there are a lot of basketball scenes that, you know, maybe not perfectly accurate, but the actor who played Kareem did a solid job with the sky hook. The actor who played Magic does a good job with dishing assists. Like, it's
you
a
better work on your step through move.
Yeah, you got to work on your McHale exactly. Step through move for sure. I've got that move. I could have showed you. Who at the Fan among our hosts would be good in sports roles? Can you think of any? Let's start with Adam Crowley. Who could he be? Rich Rodriguez, maybe? Question. Or could he be Pat McAfee? Could he be the punter from the if they did a 13-9 requiem? Could Crowley miss easy field goals? McAfee's built, though. Crowley's not, right? Who could Crowley be? Anybody?
A dainty old woman, perhaps?
Oh, my God. That's a little rough.
It's quite aggressive.
That was aggressive. Do you not like Crowley?
No, I like Crowley. He's a good guy. He's just not very athletically built.
He would definitely be a kicker. How about Doran? Could just be Doran, right? In a story about one of the Pitt football seasons. He could be a lot of people. I mean, he's literally an NFL player. So you could put him in any sports movie and he'd be great. How about Mueller? Who could he be in a sports movie? Anybody? We need a bald man with a big head. How about the coach of the Jets? You could do the Robert Saleh story starring Chris Mueller.
I was going to say, you could stick with the first name, Chris Boswell.
Chris Boswell, you could do that.
Yeah.
Does Pony look like anybody from sports history?
I think they were talking about this before. I think there's a Major League Baseball player that he resembles, perhaps. He's pretty big guy. He could definitely portray a basketball player. He's every bit of 6'3", 6'4".
Who could Ron have been? There was actually a Ron Cook who pitched for the Houston Astros at one time, although he bore no resemblance
and
to our Ron Cook.
There was that running back from Buffalo, right?
Yeah, Ron Cook Jr. from the University of Buffalo. Ron would have been a coach or a GM in one of these things.
George Carl. He could be George Carl.
He could be.
Ooh,
a bearded,
I like
George,
that.
Yeah, bearded George Carl. That's cool, though. I'm glad you told us that story. Destiny's Child. I think that took guts for you to pursue that, or just, like, you know, aggressively pursuing something that was very cool. And at least you got your foot in the door.
Yeah, they can't say I never applied for a gig in Hollywood. You can't take that away from me. But it's, I don't know. I like throwing my name out there. I don't think I'm particularly afraid of failure, which maybe is a good thing for the industry, but you know, it's something that it's a great story to tell at a bar. I'll say that much. Whenever I tell people that one, especially basketball fans, they either can't believe it and demand I show the script or something like that. So it's something that I love telling it to folks. It's a good conversation starter.
It really is. It's interesting how these things work, that the guy who wrote the book was also the guy who was trying to cast the movie in some ways. But let me ask you before I go about the Pirates. Are they going to do anything meaningful in this offseason to try and take advantage of a window they have with maybe the greatest pitcher who's ever lived? It would seem to behoove them to maybe maximize that. And unless you think... Yeah. Who's the guy they got, the first baseman? I can't even remember his name. Swink?
Spencer Horowitz.
Unless you think he's one of their answers. Well, what are they doing?
Well, the long and short of it is this, I think. And, you know, I'll try to keep this concise. But I think the reality is that in Major League Baseball right now, where you exist in an era where there is no salary cap, there is no salary floor, and the TV revenue is in flux relative to what it's been in the past, and you have an ownership that exists like it is in Pittsburgh, where Bob Nutting has demonstrated not to be, you know, a fiscally irresponsible owner, anything but that, somebody who is going to be very conservative with the money. You're not going to go out and get the big name free agents. From talking to people at the winter meetings, this team is not going to get better through splash free agent signings.
How about Jock Peterson for $15 million? $15 million for Major League Baseball owner and team is like me or you spending a quarter. How about Jock Peterson as your cleanup hitter for $15 million?
Would love to see it, but hey, that, you know, Tyler O'Neill you could have gotten for $15 million, and that made a heck of a lot more sense for the Pirates. Jock Peterson at this stage of his career, that's a DH only. He's an atrocious outfielder by the metrics and really by the eye test too. So unless that's with the intention of not bringing back Andrew McCutchen,
no,
just Peterson is a good Pittsburgh.
Platoon them. Peterson's a lefty who crushes right-handed pitching, so he plays most of the time. I don't care. All these guys can leave their gloves at the hotel. They need hitting.
They do, but I think the correct answer in my mind is you got to be willing to trade some pitching to go get some hitting.
I agree.
That, sure, you could dish out $15 million to a guy like Peterson. I'd much rather see the Pirates be bold and aggressive and be willing to part with one of their young starting pitchers the way they did with Luis Ortiz. Go do that again and go get an outfielder who's club controllable for 4 or 5 years. That, to me, is what they absolutely should do.
Will they?
Not necessarily as convinced.
Well, when you guys were writing from the meetings, I don't remember if you were part of that. I think you were with the Noah Constrictor. They're telling people that Jared Jones and Keller are available. Do you think either one of those guys does get traded?
I think if one of the guys is to get traded, I would say Keller is the more likely for two reasons. One, because, you know, he is a more proven major league commodity, but also has less of an upside at this stage of his career. And two, he's locked into a contract that, if we're going by market value, market rate for a mid-level rotation starter, Mitch Keller absolutely fits that. That's an affordable contract for most teams. And not to mention, is it affordable? You can do that in a clean swap player for player, bring somebody back who, to your point, Joe, you could bring in an outfielder who's making that $10 to $15 million a year contract. You could do that for Mitch Keller. So I don't know if I would say that it's more likely than not, but I think it's certainly still a possibility. And I think the way you have to look at it is this. This is more speculation on my part, but if you're the Pirates, you really should be willing to listen to phone calls on pretty much everybody except for Brian Reynolds and Paul Skeens and maybe O'Neill Cruz. Outside of that, I think you've got to be willing to listen. You've got to hear teams out, especially because you've got so many young pitchers and you've demonstrated not being capable of developing major league level hitters. So if it takes outsourcing that, a perfect trade partner like the Orioles, who have demonstrated the inverse where they can't develop pitchers, but they can develop, you know, a boatload of hitters, maybe that's a great place to start. We know the Orioles are looking to fill the void of Corbin Burns leaving, and they're not going to be able to bring him back. Maybe Mitch Keller makes a heck of a lot of sense in Baltimore. That's more speculation on my part than anything, but I think he's a guy who's a prime trade candidate that I would say you have to listen to phone calls on.
Very well said, although I would shorten my list of untouchables to Paul Skeens, period. But this is why we pay you the big bucks, Destiny's Child. What a great story about how you were almost Kevin McHale on an HBO TV special. Thank you for joining us, sir.
Pleasure's all mine. Thanks for having me on, Joe.
What a man he is, huh, Sean?
Yeah, that was incredible. And by the way, we've gotten the texters chiming in on who some of the fan personalities could portray. So I think some of these are pretty good.
Yeah.
Crowley could be Earl Weaver. Now, I'm not real familiar with what he looks like.
Earl Weaver was a short sort loud, of stumpy and obscene guy.
Yes.
Well, short, loud, and obscene. I do like that. Yes.
Also, two consecutive texts saying Crowley could be a horse jockey.
Oh.